Hi, and welcome to this week's Three Legs, Four Wheels F1 podcast. It's Paul here with
Dan,
Chris,
me,
Boom,
Bahrain.
Yeah, well, that was the word that all the teams, apart from McLaren, seem to be using on social media over the weekend.
We can forgive Haas for using that because they are American, Team America.
Yeah.
Yeah, they finished it off with a shakalaka.
They did shakalaka boom.
What a race.
It was pretty good, actually. Yeah. Not an awful lot of action right at the pointy end, but everywhere else, amazing.
Only because the pointy end drove off into the sunset.
Yeah.
Or the sunrise, because it was a night race.
Yeah, so drove off.
The sun had already set. Drove off into the moon.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a bad analogy. Yeah. Drove off ahead of everyone else.
Drove off into a bad analogy.
Yeah.
And 50% of the pointy end.
Most people like to call Rosberg anyway.
50% of the pointy end drove off the circuit. Oh, sorry, 25% drove off the circuit, and the other 20% got drove into.
Yes.
Where do we start by going through it? Probably the start.
Yeah, I mean, another difficult start for Mercedes. Rosberg got the better of Hamilton.
Bottas got the side of Lewis.
Yeah, but disappointing start for Ferrari. Of course, Vettel didn't start.
Yeah.
With his engine going coupled.
Yeah.
On the formation lap.
Yeah, they're not sure if it blew or not.
Had bits of metal and stuff.
Flying out the back and a lot of smoke, but they were saying during the race, they wasn't sure if it was an engine that had blown. Looked it from where we were sat.
Yeah, it did, yeah. Even on your postage stamp television, Paul. It looked like it was a pretty knackered engine.
The TV repairers phoned this morning. They're finally taking a look at my normal telly, so I'll actually be able to see pictures without the use of a
magnifying
glass or a telescope by the end of the week.
Excellent. But yeah,
that telly you're insulting, it's the same size as the one I've got.
No, it's fine. It's same size as the one I've got as well, but it's just Paul's living room is very big.
First
world problems there.
Yeah, we're sat in a room with Lee's TV, which is probably bigger than the second screen at one of our only two cinemas on the island.
Correct.
Maybe.
Yeah. You got comfier seats in here anyway.
Yeah, if you go around the back, there's a small colony of like an indigenous tribe behind there.
No, it's just the cats.
Yeah, a small colony, an indigenous tribe.
But anyway, back to the topic in hand.
So Vettel didn't make the start.
No, Vettel didn't make the start. Raikkonen had a pretty terrible start.
Palmer didn't make the start.
No, Palmer didn't make the start. Palmer decided to join Kevin Magnussen in the pits and then decided he was going to go to the garage before K-Mag even started the race.
Yeah, I think early info was it was an ERS failure.
Yeah.
Not the only one in the race, but we'll get to that shortly.
Yeah, well, I mean, what was it? So, like, Sebastian Vettel, something like 159 starts for his first DNS.
Yeah.
Julian Palmer, 2. So when the race actually got underway, Rosberg got a pretty good start ahead of Hamilton. Raikkonen's start was pretty terrible. Hamilton's wasn't great. Williams started very well.
But Bottas was going pretty quick.
Bottas was going pretty quick.
Possibly a little too quick.
Until it came time to turn into turn one.
Yeah.
With the big silver car in front of him. It was questionable at first as to whether it was a racing incident or not, but then on replays, like Lee was, you were saying before, if you watched the replay from Bottas's car, you sort of see him panicking at the steering wheel. He didn't really have control as it sort of went into the corner.
But yeah. Hamilton's called it a racing incident.
Yeah, I mean, Hamilton's not one.
He obviously hasn't seen the onboard yet.
yeah, Hamilton's calling it a racing incident because Bottas got a drive-through penalty and 2 licence points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If Bottas hadn't have got a drive-through penalty and 2 licence points, Hamilton would be calling it something a lot stronger and they would have to use the Max machine.
Yeah, but it's good to see that Lewis has appeared to left sulky Lewis behind. He was quiet Lewis, but he wasn't sulky Lewis.
There wasn't toys out of the pram decapitating somebody with a hat.
There's a lot of the season left to go.
There is a lot of the season left to go.
So he can afford to be a bit relaxed at the moment.
I mean, there's 19 races, which 2 years ago was a season.
Yeah, that's it.
Season starts now.
Like, what have we been doing for the last 2 weeks?
Exactly, yeah. But, it was a fairly entertaining start to the race. Hamilton had a bit of bodywork flying underneath his car for the first few laps.
Up to a second a lap, I reckon that cost him.
Yeah, because of the...
There was serious floor damage to... were they using the Mad Max floor or not? I didn't see, because by the time I got to see any pictures of the floor, it looked pretty jagged and revolutionary anyway.
All the cool stuff had been ripped off it.
So they reckon that Hamilton probably was impeded slightly by his... bodywork scraping along the ground for the first, it was like 7 or 8 laps, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, well, yeah, about that until the barge board finally came off.
Yeah.
Straight into Gutierrez.
Nearly impeding him a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
McLaren then. Jensen. Yeah. Is he gonna catch a break?
It'd be nice.
He was looking strong all weekend.
He was third in, was it second practice? And second practice.
He was third at one point in the first practice, third overall in the second.
He was top in FP1, wasn't he?
At one point.
I think he finished top.
No, I think he finished third.
One of them he finished finished
first. FP1 he finished 14th, FP2 he finished third.
Oh, was it? I thought I was sure he was first in one of them.
And he's always first. He was down to 13th.
Yeah.
He thought they had the power to go for points. They probably did.
Yes, they did. They got points.
Yeah, and but Jensen didn't have the power to do very much at all with an ERS failure.
Do you think it's something about the temperature in Bahrain, or possibly the amount of sand that's blowing around? Because they do say it's quite windy and it does blow a lot of sand on the circuit. Is it that ERS has struggled because it's the same problem that that Palmer had?
Well, I think it's just a fucking Honda engine, isn't it? We had
a Renault engine.
Yeah, no, I mean for McLaren, because what we had one race where one finished, didn't they? Fernando crashed.
Yeah, Fernando had a bit of a boo boo in Australia.
Yeah,
but,
boom.
Boom. Apart, I know Jensen finished the race in Australia, but there's still. We still don't know whether they've got sort of reasonably big technical problems, do we? Until we're a few races in and we start getting like two cars finishing. Yeah. Right?
Is it a pattern, or is it just
is it just pure bad luck again? I mean, maybe Jensen was driving the car that should have been Fernando's, and that had all the bad luck installed, and Stoffel was in Jensen's car and managed to get points.
Possibly.
Yeah, I did remark actually on the live blog at one point that it was quite funny that we had Fernando Alonso and Jensen Button both in the garage, but yeah, there was still a McLaren out on track.
Yeah. Amazing debut for Stoffel.
Yeah, Stoffel van Dorn did very well for his first race, considering he hadn't driven any of the 2016 car until Friday. Friday was his first go in the car.
With jet lag.
Yeah, with a little bit of jet lag flying in from Japan. And,
He was keeping Jensen Button honest all weekend.
Out-qualifying him was
a shock. We will talk about the whole qualifying situation later on tonight, because we'll have to do that after the watershed.
Yeah. We will do. But I'd also like to point out great drives as well by two other drivers. One we did mention quite a bit about after the Australian Grand Prix, Romain Grosjean.
Brilliant.
Driving the wheels off that car.
It wasn't a lucky pit stop this time. That was just pure brilliant driving from Romain Grosjean in apparently what he's saying is the best car he's ever driven. So
yeah, I mean that car and driver combination was good enough to finish fifth this week.
Yeah, he did very well.
No red flags. Just
pure racing.
And it's good strategy he was on. Yeah.
I mean, I was very sceptical of the Haas team. They've proven me wrong in their first two races by finishing sixth and fifth.
I can't remember what tyre he stuck on, but I remember it was one pit stop. I think it must have been his second stop. I think Martin Brundle said, they'll probably put the medium on and try and go to the end. And he didn't.
Oh, they stuck another set of super softs on. And then his third stop was for softs.
Yeah.
So he didn't actually touch the mediums at all. And he just wrung the speed out of that car.
Yeah, but they raced it.
Yeah, they did. Like, that's what they should be doing. They should be going for it.
Anti-Williams.
Anti-Williams. They maximised their positions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Williams' race was quite disappointing. But the other driver I want to point out did very well, Pascal Wehrlein.
Yeah,
finished 13th.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant drive.
And had his car described as, that manner is a rocket on the straights.
I can't get past him, he's a rocket on the straights.
This is manner.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's what happens when you've got no downforce.
But he didn't qualify badly, was the thing.
Qualified well.
But he looked good in... tested, didn't he, in Australia too?
Yeah, he looked good in Australia because he started very well and sort of fell back a little bit, but didn't, was quite respectable in Australia. But we were watching him overtaking Nico Hülkenberg in 14 India. That 14 India in Australia was miles down the
road.
That's
all I wanted from Manor. You know, for all this hassle I've given them since we've been doing this.
Is to be in the race.
Yeah
and not be in a separate race on their own.
They don't need to score points every race, but give me the opportunity of them sticking, like, a driver that people have got their eye on that's supposedly yeah. quite good, but give him a car in which he can surprise.
Yeah.
You know, and that's that he was ace.
Was it Wehrlein was lapped on lap 37?
37, last season, lap 5.
Yeah, it would have been lap 4 or 5, yeah.
I'd argue that what he was doing yesterday in that manner is more spectacular than the most spectacular race that Verstappen had last year.
Yeah.
I think it was more difficult than what he was doing with Verstappen.
Because he's got less to work with than Verstappen.
Yeah, he was one of those drivers who was out driving the car. And I'm saying the same about Romain Grosjean with Haas. I mean, the Haas does look pretty good, but you know, we can't really compare until we see Gutierrez really finish a race quite strongly.
Mm.
But
finish a race at all.
Yeah, finish a race at all would be nice. But yeah, at the moment, Pascal Wehrlein definitely out driving that car.
Yeah, I just wonder if that is what the Manor is capable of when it's got somebody competent behind the wheel. Are they going to get by as Remorse with Rio Haryanto?
Well, they are at the moment, I think.
Yeah.
Depends how big his check is.
No, they're hoping it bounces and they could even get Maldonado, don't
we? Well,
we're being nice to Manor, because I did send him a tweet at the weekend saying, oh, come on, you need help with your social media. You've got a job advert going, let us four do it.
We'll look after Manor's social media.
We won't let Lee anywhere near it.
Yeah, us three will do it. We'll put some gaffer tape over Lee's mouth.
Okay. I forgot to mention last week, we didn't talk about the Australia's driver of the day, you know, the fans could drive up driver of the day. Are you aware of the debacle of the driver?
Haryanto got most of the votes. And
they took off him.
Yeah, they took it away from him and gave it to Romain Grosjean.
Were people voting for him? Was it all of Indonesia voting for him, or was it just people making a mockery of the driver of the day?
No, essentially, Indonesia voted for
Rio Haryanto. Yeah.
And then Formula One went down. Fucking ridiculous. You're so stupid.
You stop being so stupid, fans. You don't know what you're talking about.
How dare you engage our sport?
Which is a common theme, as we'll move on to later.
Well, actually, let's move away from the race for a second and talk about that now.
So essentially Bernie wants control of the stuff that the fans vote on.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this is true. Haryanto got more votes than anyone in Australia, and they gave driver of the day to Romain Grosjean.
I believe there was despotism, isn't it?
Yeah, because Formula One, and we are looking squarely at you, Mr. Eccleston. We're having to crouch down to do it, obviously, because you're a twisted midget. Should I edit that out?
No.
We are looking squarely.
With any luck, he won't hear it.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, no, well, he won't, because we'll be promoting this on social media. And in the world of Formula One, social media doesn't exist and isn't allowed to exist. Lewis has been banned from Snapchatting in the paddock.
Well, what was Lewis's response to that?
Filming a Snapchat of him walking into the garage.
Yeah.
Because the commercial rights holders, Mr. Eccleston, have decided that only companies that pay to film and broadcast the races are the ones that are allowed to film anywhere in the circuit. That includes the drivers, and they can't even post pictures, videos, whatever, to their fans. Social media, like it or not, is a thing.
Mm. And it's a big thing. It's not bad.
It's a big thing that is encompassing every aspect of life practically at the moment, unless you live in a cave. But for Formula One to just clamp down on it, refuse to use it for their own ends.
Well, no, they do use it, but
it's terrible.
It is awful, but it has to be credited through the Formula One special account, which, you know, is. Social media is a great way of reaching out to people, a light-hearted kind of way. You know, it doesn't have to be super serious press releases all the time, things like that. But Formula One don't seem to get this.
Yeah,
I don't understand it.
I don't think
that, like, social media, oh, this person took a picture of themselves with Lewis Hamilton in the paddock and then put it on Facebook. We want it removed because we own the rights to it. But hang on a second. No, you don't.
you know, I mean, you just have to look at some of the stuff that Renault comes out with over a race weekend. Look, you know, it's obviously the same team that did it when there were Lotus last season.
Yeah, VM's third team.
Yeah, and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you three guys, but it's given me a newfound respect for that team, because it's just proved that they are not po-faced with a stick up their ass taking everything seriously.
Yeah.
Mm. McLaren.
Not necessarily McLaren. McLaren's social media team's quite funny at times.
Yeah.
They post some pretty funny stuff. They even refer back to previous drivers at some points, like when Sergio Perez overtakes Jenson Button, for example. They're like, oh, that cheeky Perez, you know, with a bit of a fist shake. They can be quite funny with their social media, but yeah, there is a certain arsery about banning social media.
Yeah, and it's just complete dictatorship, and it's just Eccleston saying you can only look at what I say you can look at and how you can look at it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and that is not reaching out to people; it's pushing them away.
Do you know what the terrible thing is as well, which I found out over the weekend?
What was that thing you said about Jean Todt and the Twitter?
Oh, the John Todd and the Twitter?
Yeah.
Yeah, he...
Swearing alert.
Yeah. He was asked... He was asked if he knew what the fans thought, you know, about the qualifying debacle. And he said, I think there's a large portion of the Formula 1 fans that are in favour of the elimination of qualifying, to which the media guy turned around and said, well, do you know what's going on Twitter? Like, you know, the responses this has had. He said, oh yeah, he said, I don't go on Twitter, but my assistant prints me pages of Twitter off and I read them all.
So basically, as far as qualifying goes, everyone that uses a computer can't stand it, but everyone that uses a carrier pigeon to sends it to Jean Todt loves it.
Basically, Jean Todt thinks Formula1.com, when he gets it printed off, is Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, when you've got the... Lewis Hamilton is... We said the same thing. I'm probably treading old ground now. But he handles his fans really well.
Yeah.
You know, and he really gives a bit of him. And you really feel that when...
Well, going about the Snapchats that Chris shows is usually his shoes.
Nico Rosberg, for instance. When Nico Rosberg comes on the radio and when he wins a race, goes, yeah, guys, yeah. He sounds false on the radio talking to his own team.
I'm pretty sure Nico Rosberg's going to sound false whatever he does.
Well, possibly.
Well, but I think there's a reason for that. It's to do with his media training, and his actual personality clashes with what he's told to do. It doesn't come naturally to him.
Yeah.
So every time you hear him being excited, it almost sounds...
Like he's thinking, I need to be excited.
Yeah,
don't forget, he was kind of brought up in the Williams environment, which is very British and very reserved.
Yeah. I was just going to say, sometimes it comes across that he comes across as being, you know, when you see people, when you see people dancing and they don't really want to dance, they seem a bit embarrassed about it. That's the way
you see me dance.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, with Rosberg, actually, I just thought the perfect analogy. You can take the driver out of Williams...
But you can't take the Williams out of the driver. But yeah, Lewis gives a bit of himself to his fans, and I think it's great what he does. Yeah, we're like on his thing. But he got in trouble for his Snapchat the other week, didn't he? As well, when he was on a plane or something.
He was on a plane.
Yeah, he might have said something a little bit questionable. It wasn't really racist, but it wasn't really what a world champion. Formula One world champion should be saying.
I think I saw it and I can't remember what he said now.
He basically said, I thought this plane might be going to China, I just wanted to make sure we boarded the right plane because there's a lot of Chinese people on this plane.
It was kind of a bad stab at a 1970s sitcom joke.
Maybe, I don't know, but I think I've got lots of views on things like this. I think the problem is with the internet nowadays, people feel like they have the right not to be offended by things, and you don't. Sorry. But regardless of that, Lewis Hamilton should be allowed to do what he's doing because he draws people into the sport.
That is the thing, because surely the drivers individually proving that they are human and not just robotic corporate shills that reel out the Formula One team and sponsors line every time the microphone shoved in front of them.
I'd like to thank the great country of Bahrain for hosting this race.
It makes them more human, and you can identify with any sport if the participants are human and you feel like you've got something in common with them.
I would just like to point out, I'm on my phone right now just having a look at tweets of Formula One. Fernando Alonso in the last hour has just done a big long question and answer session through tweets on Twitter, just asking, answering questions both in Spanish and English, and what I think it looks like Italian as well. Just for example, a woman here called Susanna has asked him, "Are you proud of racing for McLaren? I've always been a McLaren fan, so just wanted to know." And his response is, "Very proud. I'm probably an F1 driver because I saw as a kid the McLaren Honda domination on TV. So now it's a dream." Instant interaction with the fans. The reaching
last,
out. From,
sorry, now it's a dream. The last time, not so much.
Now it's a dream. Last time, good lord, don't even. Yeah. Somebody here has just asked him, you know, a non-Formula One related question: place or country you haven't visited that you would like to? And his response: Argentina.
The podium.
Well, he's a double world champion, so of course he's visited the podium.
Did you see what he said to Johnny Herbert?
The podium in a Honda hat.
Yes.
Did you see what he said to Johnny Herbert?
Yes,
that was amazing.
Yeah. Johnny Herbert did deserve it.
A little bit of background for anyone that didn't see it. Johnny Herbert, when it was announced that Alonso wouldn't be racing at the weekend, came out with, and this is going by Johnny Herbert's standards, something bloody ridiculous, saying that maybe it's time for Fernando to retire.
I'm not sure whether it is.
No. You said when the announcement was made, now watch all the Alonso to retire conspiracy theories coming out.
Yeah, but
because we know you love a good conspiracy
theory. But I've already said years ago, like podcasts.
Yes, we've got all four of them later.
Yeah, that's true.
My podcasts ago, that race in Brazil when Vettel beat Alonso to the championship broke Alonso, and we've never seen Alonso, proper Alonso, since that day, and I don't think he's coming back.
I know what you mean, because you look back at some of the races 2004, 2005, when he's pushing Michael Schumacher out of the way, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, to win races, and yeah, I still think if you put him in a competitive car, he will compete, but is he as Alonso-esque as he used to be?
But going back to the Johnny Herbert thing,
yes.
Johnny Herbert comes out and says, Alonso should retire. That's it. This is the one that's finished him. Johnny Herbert was then next seen recording a piece for Sky where he was punditing and commentating. Alonso walks up to him.
It was live, you know.
Was it actually live?
It was live.
I had Channel 4 on at the time, so I didn't see. So Alonso comes up to him. Herbert says, "So are you going to retire then?" And Alonso's response was,
"No, he didn't ask him."
The one I saw, he did.
No, you had Johnny Herbert and the blonde woman from Sky,
Rachel Brooks.
Yeah, and they were just talking, and Nando was off camera somewhere, and Rachel Brooks turned around to Johnny, sort of looked at, "I think someone wants a word with you, Johnny." And he came on, and he just started saying to me, he said, "Oh, I'm not retiring." And he said, Johnny said, "Oh, no, you're not retiring." He says, no, I'm a world champion. I'm a world champion, and you're a commentator because you're not a world champion.
Yeah, and then walked off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also, it was quite funny when Martin Brundle approached Alonso on the grid. Alonso was just sort of, on Martin Brundle's grid walk. Alonso was just sort of stood there, somewhere near Stoffel Van Dorn's car, just sort of to take in the atmosphere, sort of see what was going on. There were lots of people surrounding Stoffel, of course, at the time. Everybody wanted an interview with him. As he approached Alonso, he just went, "Oh, no, don't talk to me, please." Every time you want to come and talk to me, all the time.
He did get a bit of an interview with him, and he said, "What have you learned being on the pit wall over the weekend?" And Alonso's response was, the radio signal's terrible on the pit wall. I thought they could hear me perfectly, but it's all feedback.
Yeah, so he's taken the opportunity and he's learned, or tried to learn some things from the other side of the garage, which he hopes will help him going forward.
Yeah, I mean, so there was the photo bombing incident as well when the cars were coming out onto
the pit lane.
Onto the pit lane, yeah. And he just leans over and looks straight in the camera.
Straight down the camera as well, yeah. But the willingness is still there. He still wants to learn. He still wants to push forward. I don't think it's quite time for Alonso to retire yet.
No.
If that McLaren becomes competitive, if it becomes competitive,
we've already seen it kind of compete, but not with him behind the wheel.
No, he will do the job.
Oh yeah. And obviously, he said next season's car and rules are going to be the clincher.
Yeah.
And
I think his performance this year will be the clincher, and I think McLaren's performance will be the clincher.
Well, I don't know, because I mean, it's, well, when last we heard, it's going to be a complete reset for the rules next year, or then it isn't, but then they're going to have some more meetings about it.
When they were discussing the rule changes for next year, that's when they changed, thought, this is boring, let's talk about qualifying instead.
Yeah.
I'd also argue that whether Stoffel van Dorn's going to get, going to come into the team next year, that might influence Alonso's decision.
Well, there was talk that this weekend was essentially an audition to be Alonso's teammate next year between Button and Van Dorn.
But when you're Alonso and you've already been in McLaren when one of Ron's special little guys has come into the team, would you want to go through that again?
Well, it didn't exactly work well the first time
that's exactly what Lee's point, but
if I was McLaren and I've just watched Stoffel van Dorn pretty much not beat Button but match the performance well enough,
his first go,
I would be saying next year I want him in the driving car. Seat,
yep,
so that he can actually learn the racecraft and get us a world championship.
No, I think you're right. I think he will be in one of them cars next year.
You know, you can only get odds of 5-1 on Van Dorn winning the World Championship before 2020.
Is that all?
Yeah. Somebody tweeted that into Sky during qualifying.
Yep.
That is incredibly low, and that's what the experts seem to think. And we're not experts, and we are convinced by him as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, going back to the race, looks like our predictions for Sauber are coming true. They were anonymous.
Hang on a second, yeah.
We'll talk about the anonymous, not the rumours.
Towards the start, they weren't particularly anonymous. They were battling each other pretty hard.
They were racing back mid-race. They were in the final points position, and we did see them on the television when they overtook each other for 10th place. So once Albon,
and there was no quarter given there.
No. That was good wheel to wheel racing between the two Sauber drivers.
Didn't they hit each other at one point?
Probably.
I'm sure.
After the race and back in the garage.
Yeah. When was it? Felipe Nasr came on right towards the end of the race and said, "This car is terrible to drive."
Probably not the best thing to have broadcast when your team principal is in Switzerland trying to get more sponsorship.
More sponsorship?
Some sponsorship, sort out the money problems.
Sponsorship, we'll not speculate, but it looks like...
But other people have done.
Other people have speculated that Sauber's problems from February could be continuing into April and long term.
I'm going to stick a counter theory out to the sponsorship theory. That she wasn't in Switzerland trying to find
sponsors.
She was in Switzerland sorting out getting the team ready for sale.
That, which is a possibility. We know there's a couple of investment groups and motor manufacturers. But the thing you've got to look at with Sauber is early last year. Sort of early 2015, McLaren were around Sauber. Sauber were miles ahead of Manor. They were kind of hoping to target Force India a little bit. Force India sort of moved themselves ahead of Sauber somewhat.
Except Manor this weekend.
Manor have disappeared down the road from Sauber now.
Like a rocket on a straight.
Yeah, and McLaren have improved, and Sauber don't really appear to, and I say are being very anonymous about it, aren't really improving.
No.
They're sort of standing still whilst everyone else around them is making, fair enough, making mistakes to fall behind them occasionally, but
making overall progress.
Yeah, we're not seeing. We've seen an excellent race from Perez in the last few races of last season, and early on the season, the Force India was showing good pace. McLaren, we've seen Button in P3 during one of the practice sessions, and Van Dorn driving very well to get the points and weekend just gone. Like you just said, the Manor is a rocket on the straight. We're not seeing anything spectacular from either of the Saubers. They're being very Swiss.
They've only got one gear and it's neutral.
Yes.
there's loads of holes in it.
They're full of chocolate and watches.
Well, the whole team's just gone cuckoo.
Yes.
Oh, Jesus. Fucking
hell. We'll get away from that. Force India didn't have the best of weekends.
No.
They pretty much had the worst of weekends. Mm.
Just quickly, on the cell, what we were just going to say before we got off them, is it fair to turn around and say that, like, Sauber have gone downhill since Peter Sauber put Manisha Kaltenborn in charge of the team?
Common internet thinking is that he left her.
Sauber were going downhill and
he left.
Then he left.
Yeah, after BMW pulled out, he managed to just do enough to keep the team going on one kind of footing or another.
Right.
And then he bailed. She is basically doing everything that she can to keep it going, including signing, say, 5 drivers for one season.
What do you mean this is an P1?
But he's just landed the whole mess on her and said, basically, you're in charge, sort it out. It would appear that it was that way behind the scenes before she took charge. It's just that she didn't know the enormity of the task ahead of her. And she's not got a background in any form of sport. She's a lawyer.
BMW fucked two teams really hard, didn't they? Between Williams and Sauber. Decimated them.
Williams
has got back, obviously, but
the Williams do well with the budget that they have. Yeah. You consider that their budget is around about 100 million per year, less than Ferrari's.
Yeah, but when you think that in the 90s they were the team to be.
Oh yeah, they were. Mm. Yeah.
Don't forget they also have the historic winners.
Yes.
Shares and stuff.
I think if any team screwed Williams over in the past, it was Renault when they pulled out and left him with the Mechachrome.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Put through Briatore Corp. Force India. Terrible weekend for them.
Yeah, Perez got caught out by qualifying, didn't he?
Yeah.
In Q1.
But he should have the car underneath him and the driving skills to make up for that.
And we've already mentioned Hülkenberg being passed by Pascal Wehrlein at one point during the race for what was, I think, was the final position of 13th.
Yeah.
I don't know where Hülkenberg actually finished. Was it 15th and 16th?
15th and 16th for Hülkenberg and Perez respectively.
Not great.
Hulk 10 places down as usual.
Yeah, considering that in Australia they looked strong, the Force Indians did look strong.
And in Barcelona they looked
very strong.
Incredible, yeah.
So are we going to get to China and see them fall behind the Saubers?
Well, I think Saubers Barcelona was, anti-sandbagging.
Bag sanding.
We've talked about this before, They
bag sanding.
But yeah, they just didn't have any answers this weekend.
I think it's interesting that they're where they are and all the problems are going on behind the scenes with Force India. I think maybe there's another a cash flow problem there with with all the legal issues Vijay is in at the minute.
Mm.
It seems to be a coincidence.
I don't know, because you do get some circuits that just do not suit some cars.
Yeah, possibly.
If you think about the Mercedes at Malaysia last year.
They
just couldn't get it hooked up in Singapore again.
In that case, they're in real trouble because Australia's a one-off and Bahrain's a fucking proper circuit.
possibly.
But Bahrain's a night race with sharply falling temperatures through the race.
Cars will react differently, but I mean, I think that's part of the reason why it's become a brilliant race since they turned it into a night race. It's just, it really is very, very good.
It does ramp up the unpredictability.
Yeah. I mean, we were riding on board with I think it was Danny Kvyat when he was being attacked by Max Verstappen. Then all of a sudden, Bottas just appeared out of nowhere.
Yeah,
it was like, how is that a 3-car fight? Why didn't we see that beforehand? That's what we want to see. We do want to see that kind of action.
Yeah, things like the man making up three seconds on a Sauber in 2 laps.
Yeah,
and
visibly being able to see them catch.
Yeah.
Well, considering Bahrain used to be Bahrain.
We did that one last week.
Yeah.
Talking of Kvyat, Red Bull.
Kvyat.
Solid performance from them.
Yeah.
Kvyat
looked like he was struggling early on, but he picked up the pace, and I think he was referred to halfway through the race as the new improved Danny Kvyat, who would have had was it Sky who was saying that he would have to sit down with Helmut Marko and have some video play to him of, I think it was when Max Verstappen passed him, and then he had some brilliant overtaking manoeuvres of his own up his sleeve. So well, now he's got something back to show Helmut Marko if Helmut Marko does decide to sit down with him. Kvyat is a still an unknown quantity, really. Is he really good or is he terrible?
I don't think he's terrible. I think he's average. I don't think he'll be in the car next year.
Yeah. The Red Bull do tend to give their drivers 2 seasons in each team, either in Toro Rosso or in the Red Bull main team, unless you're winning world championships.
Or beating world champions.
The top bottom of it is that car is a lot better than they thought it was going to be this year. You know, it's clearly a good car.
Danny Rick's been brilliant. Yeah,
it's a good car with an underpowered engine, and I think you can tell Danny Ricciardo must be one of those guys that he needs a car that he underneath him that he can, and then he can exploit it.
Yeah.
Because you know when he gets in the car, that's as quick as the car can go.
Yeah, he does drive a car to its full capabilities. I mentioned before about drivers that outdrive their cars, Romain Grosjean this weekend, perhaps. You know, that Haas is a very good car, we can't really tell yet. Pascal Wehrlein, definitely. Danny Rick, in the same category as them, pushes the car to its full capabilities, maybe even outdrives it slightly.
It's hard to tell when he's been in decent cars, really, his career.
Yeah, 2 fourth places when we're really considering that the top 4 drivers, right, fair enough, Vettel didn't start the race, top 4 drivers should be 2 Mercedes and 2 Ferraris, maybe the Williams behind them. But yeah, I mean, Danny Rick's doing a sterling job.
You know, you take the best of what you've got, and I mean, that's something that he's very capable of doing.
Absolutely. Somebody we haven't mentioned, I'd just like to mention quickly, 2nd place to Kimi Raikkonen.
Yeah. Loves the podium in Bahrain.
Hates the that from his face.
Yeah, oh yeah. That's his 7th Bahrain podium.
Something like that.
Yeah. He's got the most podiums there, and they have the least amount of booze on it.
Rosewater.
it's bad luck just for him, because we know he likes a drink. A Iceman long drink.
It's not bad luck. He seems to do well in dry states. There's a fucking thing there.
Yeah.
Now you come to mention it like that, I've not thought of it like that.
Abu Dhabi, yes, leave him alone, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
He was frustrated and sober. Yeah, Formula One's very own Father Jack.
But yeah, he had a great one. If he'd had a better start, we'd have seen him, in my opinion, we'd have seen him challenging Nico, and I think we'd have seen him make a job of holding him off before the first pit stops.
I think that he might have been in the position to make Nico do something wrong, but I think that race proved that Ferrari have got a way to go, to be honest.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I mean,
Dan's got his frown of disagreement on
it. Yeah, it wasn't... yeah, I both agree and disagree with it. It's not. We haven't seen a clear cut fight yet, but when we do, it will be interesting to see just how close the Ferrari is. Mm-hmm. What we've seen is a couple of bad starts, good starts, and then sort of a strategy cock up from Ferrari in the first race.
Where they could potentially have won that.
They should have won it. And, you know, given that Kimi could have had a better start, as point just been made by Paul, then we probably would have seen Kimi well up there with the Mercedes, but we just don't know. Ferrari do start.
I don't think you can take one race performance and
No, they're definitely behind Mercedes, but we just don't know how far.
Yeah.
Yeah, is it a hundredth? Is it a tenth?
Yeah. Is it a second?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, if Lewis's car, even from where he was, if that was losing him a second a lap, he'd have beaten Raikkonen.
Yeah.
And I think that to me, shows more where the cars are. Because he dropped back to like the largest part after the third pit stop, didn't he? But that was more because... No, that's how the pit stops worked out. But he was keeping pace with Raikkonen with a fucked car.
Yeah.
So, you know, it doesn't look good for the Ferrari championship battle in my eyes. But saying that...
But it's one circuit. And last race they should have won.
Yeah. I was just hoping they'd be a bit closer.
Cat fight in the middle of the podcast. Cat fight between cats.
Yes.
They didn't need to know that.
No, but just in case anyone's wondering what the yelling and thumping was.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah,
honest.
Yeah, we have two podcasts this week, and I would say that it's not that they're not getting along. It's one of them was trying to get along with the other one better than
too much information.
Yes, yeah. we'll leave that there. We haven't really mentioned Gutierrez yet. He had to retire with a brake problem.
Didn't do very much, that's why.
Didn't do a great deal. Got hit by a bit of Lewis.
Yeah.
Second DNF, bad luck again. Getting hit by something on track. This time it was coming forward rather than coming from behind him.
He was pretty dumb in qualifying, though, wasn't he?
I'm not sure where did he qualify.
Gutierrez 13th.
So Q2
compared to Grosjean's 9th.
Yeah, that's not so bad.
He's split Van Dorn and Button.
Yeah, you see, I don't know. I think if any team's going to have buyer's remorse at the end of the year, I think it might be Haas with.
No, I still think it'd be Manor with Harry Anto at the moment.
I know what you mean, but Harry Anto's not there to go fast. That's the thing. Harry Anto is there.
He's there to pay for the line.
To pay the checks. So it doesn't matter. I mean, realistically,
Thomas Enger's not racing anymore.
As long as he keeps it out of the barrier and he doesn't keep Maldonado in it, you know, they'll let him run around. He can run there around 5 seconds off the back of everybody. Doesn't matter. He's just a moving chicane at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just talking about the buyer's remorse with Harry Anto, though. Is it going to get to the point where Verline is challenging for points and Manor actually start to think, well, hang on a minute, we could have two
points.
Drivers challenging for points here.
Pastor Maldonado comes in for Spa, for example. You know, one of those races where you can buy a seat for a race.
Yeah.
Would Pastor Maldonado want to race for Manor, though?
Pastor Maldonado said that he wouldn't race for Manor, and now Manor are actually okay. He might be going, ah, fuck.
Have Manor got enough pieces of car?
No, not right now.
Not at the minute, but this is Spa, so they've got time to get more constructed in case.
If PDVSA can build or pay for things to be built, then Pastor Maldonado.
I don't think Pastor Maldonado would even be able to buy his way into Manor, because let's face it, if whoever Harry Anto's investors are had the money to convince Manor to take on however old he is, guy, which has never really had any sort of Premier Series experience.
He hasn't raced a single seater for 4 years.
Yeah, so you know that's a big check. That's like comedy check style big check.
Yeah, and also don't forget that Manor did re-sign Alex Rossi
as their reserve driver for 11 race weekends when there isn't a clash with IndyCar.
Yeah.
Could we be seeing him?
No, I think that's a lot more likely than Maldonado.
It is a lot more likely, but I think they need the money, so they're going to keep. If they can have Wöhrlein making the car look better than it is.
I mean, unless there's some kind of performance clause in Harry Anto's contract, because that could be the case. You know, he's got to at least have a stab at being competitive.
But again, I don't think he's there to be competitive. But I don't think that's his job. I think his job is to keep the lights on. He's essentially electricity king.
Let's talk about Toro Rosso.
Yes, let's.
Less eventful than Australia.
Yeah. Sainz.
Yeah, was really struggling.
He couldn't get anything out of it.
Didn't he have a problem?
I think so. Yeah.
Pulled into the pits, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because all we didn't see him pulling into the pits, and all of a sudden there was a shot of the garage.
Sainz is getting out of the car, and there must have been something up with the car from the start, because he wasn't doing what you'd expect.
I think he got caught up in some of the incidents around the first corner, didn't he?
I'm amazed there was no punches with the amount of carbon fibre that was kicking around that place.
Yeah, Nigel Mansell made the tweet that. Made the point in a tweet that there was a lot of carbon fibre flying off of cars.
Yeah.
Just in, you know, under load rather than, you know, in incidents or anything like that. It's just bits just breaking off here, there and everywhere.
I think there'd been quite a lot of incidents and a lot of damage to carbon fibre. Yeah, so it wasn't just, a car's driving fast, it's lost its wing.
Whoa. That's a worrying trend that we haven't mentioned as well. The fact that Haas had another front wing failure this weekend.
At what point?
In testing.
Oh, I didn't spot that.
Exactly the same as Australia, where Grosjean, wing just fell off. So that's not ideal.
No, they've obviously got their wing level set a little bit differently.
Insert Red Bull joke where you seem appropriate.
Yes.
I mean, Williams were bringing the new front wing. For the weekend.
Didn't do anything for them.
No, apparently it was turning up in the early hours of Saturday morning. They didn't have it Friday, but it was going to get there for FP3 and qualify.
Stuck it on Massa's car. They said it did work, but Massa complained it gave him too much front end grip.
Too much? Maybe that affects the handling.
It threw the balance of the car off, apparently.
I can understand that.
Yeah. I'd imagine that sort of thing could be fixed with a couple of days free practice and testing.
Well, that was it. They said they just didn't have enough time to test it. But yeah, the thing with the wing was it worked, and they were happy with the fact it worked.
But it worked a bit too well.
Yeah. But I still don't think we're going to see either of those people in that car next year.
You reckon we'll both be out on the race?
I think I know we had a conspiracy theory about. Rosberg and Drista. I actually now think after this race that the more likely conspiracy theory is that they're bringing Drista in to get more used to the team, because they want one experienced driver that's got testing and simulator experience for the 2017 car, because they can't just draft in Alex Lynn without having a hand in the other car.
Drista for Williams. We'll see what transpires through that.
Yeah. While we're on the subject of conspiracy theories and Williams.
Yeah.
Moving to Twitter conversation that I had with one of our regular listeners, Ryan from Oncom.
Hello, Ryan.
He said, started off by tweeting, Williams is so negative with their strategy, it winds me up. What do you guys think?
Yeah, they...
I'll get to the conspiracy theory part.
They are great at going backwards. Second and third after the first corner and finish, but what's it, sorry, 8th and 11th?
Yeah. 8th and 9th.
8th and 9th. Not brilliant. I mean, Bottas... Yeah, that first corner incident, even dispelling that first corner incident, he still would have gone backwards. Might not have gone backwards quite as far as Felipe Massa did, but still went back, because at one point Massa was second.
Yeah. Well, I text you guys, didn't I, saying with all these cars that are going out and out of position, Williams are going to have to go really out of the way not to score points this year.
Yeah, exactly. And they nearly did.
I mean, that was the thing, and it's another thing that Ryan pointed out, that they just blew the tyre strategy. Mediums on lap 8,
yeah,
with a lot of traffic to get through.
Yeah, when everyone else was still being aggressive, Williams went conservative. It was a very strange thing to do.
Yeah,
but
Rob Smedley has lost the plot.
Either Rob Smedley has lost the plot, Or conspiracy theory time.
Conspiracy theory time.
Or they were expecting a safety car, or...
Yeah, possibly.
That's
or,
conspiracy theory.
The conspiracy theory. Perhaps he's on a covert mission from Ferrari to stop Williams threatening them.
Ah, very good, Ryan. We like this.
You get the tinfoil hat award for the week, Ryan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where are they going wrong?
Where are they going right might be easy to answer.
Where are they going wrong? They...
Drivers.
Lee said before they've forgotten how to win.
No, I think the other thing is that they're
scared of winning.
They haven't got a driver that hustles. Valtteri Bottas 2 years ago was fucking ace, but that doesn't seem to be happening anymore.
But I think a lot of it comes out of the fact that Massa is kind of, by default, in a position of lead driver for the team because he's more experienced.
Mm. Yeah.
But he's just come up through the ranks as a complete number two because he was Schumacher's number two.
Yeah, it's as if he's had some sort of bump to the head.
And then of course, the whole Fernando is faster than you thing.
Yeah.
And yes, Ferrari held him back in the Rubens role again with a different lead driver. And he's gone to Williams and he's just sat there waiting to be told when to slow down and let the other guy go past.
I still
and he's slowing down and letting about five other guys go past.
I still go stand by the fact that he isn't in Williams because Williams wanted Felipe Massa. He's in Williams because he came with
Smedley,
and Smedley has essentially worked him into the contract.
Well, that's kind of what Rob Smedley sort of alluded to last year, was that Smedley actually, even though he was announced after Massa, did the deal beforehand and then convinced Felipe Massa to join him at Williams, believing that they were going to be doing something very special and different to Ferrari.
Anyway, those two signs have worked out.
They are doing something very different to Ferrari.
Yeah. Not competing.
Looking at the podium from a distance. We've had another couple of emails this week.
Yep.
Which we can take a look at now. Main one, talking point, Dan from Munich. Hi, Dan.
Good name.
Thanks for your email. He said, what will F1 be like in 25 years' time? The drive behind the switch to these power units, no pun intended, was the aim to remain relevant to the future of road cars. By that logic, as we're entering an epoch of diminishing oil reserves and car manufacturers introducing visions of the future, be it electric, hydrogen or other, must F1 keep up or grow outdated?
Yeah, it
has to.
I think to predict what F1's going to look like in 25 years' time, first you need to know what road cars are going to look like in 25 years' time.
Mm-hmm. Thing is, if we go back to the 1991 season, which is 25 years ago, we had all the driver aids under the sun.
Yeah.
Which are now on road cars.
Yeah.
Active suspension, anti-lock brakes.
Yeah.
Traction control.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. F1's actually taken those away, even though they're fitted as standard on just about all road cars these days.
Yeah.
But this was part of the mission to the ever never ending mission to slow Formula One cars down, wasn't it? To a certain point.
Yeah.
Which all kicked in at the start of the 1994 season, mm-hmm. Pre Senna.
Yeah.
Because the cars the season before had the active suspension, the 1994 cars didn't,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't as drivable. He also says, if it continues to try and evolve to be the cutting edge of future road-going cars, we're going to get rid of the internal combustion engine in F1 within 25 years and see a formula based on electric or hydrogen engines, by which time will it be a matter of merging with Formula E or existing alongside, like Rugby Union and Rugby League.
Then he makes a good point after that.
Yeah. I suspect Formula E as a series will be more established by then, more relevant and better managed. Can F1 compete as the older series struggling to remain relevant? If Bernie's still involved, I'll be surprised if F1 lasts another season.
That's the good point, if Bernie's still involved.
I think F1 has the momentum. It's got a huge history, viewers. It's got an awful lot that Formula E doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
What I would see happening at some point in the future is they're going to stop specifying what engine you've got to use and say, if you're using petrol, diesel, aircraft fuel, whatever it is, then you can use fuel at this rate. Otherwise, stick whatever combustion, whatever kind of a power unit you want in there.
Yeah.
So you will have electric cars racing against hydrogen cars racing against traditional oil-based fuel cars.
Yeah. I think there's another...
Again, no pun intended, a hybrid series.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think there's another thing to think about here as well, is the fact that they say, well, whether even if Formula E is more established, because I personally think, I don't think it'll take 25 years for Formula One to have to switch, you know, to that step, 10 years maybe. If in 10 years Formula E might be more established, it might be better run, I don't think it'll be at the same level as Formula One. You know, I think if it's lucky, it could be at a similar level to like World Superbikes. Yeah, I think is a good ground for a Premier Series, which isn't the Premier Series.
The thing you remember, in the late 90s, early 2000s, World Superbikes did overtake
MotoGP.
Yes,
as the Premier thing.
The fans' preferred option.
The thing you've got to think about as well is that Formula E is very young. So what's this, its second season still?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, but it's not only the second season. It doesn't run an annual season yet, does it?
It goes over 2 years. It's like September to when's the London Race? Is about May?
June.
Yeah. So it doesn't run it in an annual basis, which might be the way forward. We don't know, possibly.
It's not, because it's hard to follow.
Yeah, and it's on an uphill climb. It's gaining followers. It's gaining sponsorship, and it will become better managed, and it will become not like Formula One, but it will become a more established formula as time goes on. Formula One is at the moment going downhill, losing viewers, the casual viewers. The long time, you know, sort of hardcore fans of Formula One are starting to about where is the sport going. It's uncertain.
Well, we've just spent the last 58 minutes doing that.
But long time fans of Formula One have been doing that for the past 50 or so years.
I remember when I started watching, I really started watching Formula One in 1996. That was the first year. I watched it in 95, so 94 a bit, 95 most of the season. I was in at 96, and I remembered in 1997, after like the first year I watched it, the Concorde agreement was up, and there was Splinter Series. Oh, will Formula One make 1998? You know, this has always gone on. Well, what's happening right now?
McLaren are threatening to leave and start their own series.
So I.
But the common thread there has always been the participants arguing with Bernie.
But this is where I agree with Bernie to a certain extent. I know we've gone slightly off subject.
Oh, it's good talking point.
But if you, when Bernie says the teams and drivers shouldn't have a say in the rules, kind of shouldn't. Because anyone in that situation is going to lobby to best suit themselves.
I think they've got to have a bit of a say in the technical regulations. But I don't imagine you see too many footballers telling FIFA how the rules of football should be.
No, quite
and
right.
FIFA listening to
them. Well, I don't know, because some of them do get paid enough to hit FIFA's bribe level. But should the commercial rights holder also be the only person to have a say in what the rules of the sport are?
No,
and
I absolutely not.
I came up with an analogy on our private chat group. We're all on the Isle of Man. The Isle of Man TT is an annual event. The Isle of Man government are the commercial rights holder for that. Could you imagine the politicians deciding what the rules are for a bike race?
No.
You know, with the current obsession on the Isle of Man, the government would insist that it's all run on horse trams.
Probably. Backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. In more ways than one.
Yeah. So there's got to be that Chinese wall between the people that are making money out of the sport and the people that are making the decisions.
Yeah, which is what, you know, this go using FIFA again as an example, this is what this inquiry into FIFA has come up with. The commercial part and the sporting part need to be completely separate. Yeah, they have to work together on certain things, but the people who run the sporting part don't have anything to do with the commercial part. They don't do any of the commercial dealings. That's done by a completely different part of another branch, even perhaps not even part of FIFA. FIFA should concentrate on football and football alone. Whereas if you look at Formula One, you've got FOM, Formula One Management, which is the commercial rights holder part of the business, shouldn't have anything to do with the rules,
which should be set by the FIA.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Bernie should not really, in all truth, sit down with John Todt and go, I don't like this rule.
No.
What are you guys going to do about this?
But in the same respect, I think that competing teams, to a certain degree, should be given a set of rules to go and design your cars around it. And it's, you don't like the rules? Maybe Formula One's not for you.
That's fair enough, but there's got to be some leeway with when you've only got a small number of teams. This is where it completely differs from football.
Mm-hmm.
You've only got 11 teams in Formula One. The teams are gonna have to have some kind of say because they have a louder voice. Because there's less chance for fragmentation in that.
Yeah.
With football, you've got 5 or 6 continental confederations and then countless countries. You know, you've got a total of 198 or some.
And the same rules from the grassroots games up to the top level games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can't have the same rules in 50cc go-karts that you've got in an F1 race. So the teams have to be able to advise on what technically is doable and achievable and possible.
Yeah, well, I understand that because you can't, as you said, you can't have politicians making like rules when you need scientists, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've got to have more input from the teams in each particular category just because there's less of them and there's more chance of them being a united voice.
All of the stakeholders need to have input, and the stakeholders are everyone from the drivers, the teams, the fans,
yeah,
the circuits,
yeah,
the TV stations. All of those need to have input.
Yeah, because it could get to the point where Bernie says, right, okay, Silverstone's going to be a night race, I've decided. It's going to have a 7 o'clock start because we want to get the British Grand Prix in the US market, and Silverstone go, well, who's paying for the lights then?
Yeah. Well, he wanted to turn Australia into a night race, didn't he?
Yeah.
And they say, well, we just can't afford to do that. But if we go, I mean, we're on to calendar planning. I have no fucking idea what we could do. Where about that?
Or how it relates to how Formula One will look in 25 years' time.
On the 25 years' time Formula One thing, I think we talked about this when there was the... how many teams are going to drop out and will we have 3-car teams?
Yeah.
In 25 years' time, I do see it being a manufacturer-only sport.
The end of the privateers.
Yeah.
I think it needs to sort of go that way a little bit.
Yeah, I think at some point it probably will become a manufacturer-only series, but in 25 years' time we might have gone through that and have privateers racing and
possibly.
But we don't forget we're very close to it being a manufacturer only one.
Mm-hmm.
About 10 years ago, because even the teams like Williams and BAR were effectively factory teams, because they were the ones supported by the manufacturers. When Williams had the BMW, BAR had the Honda. The Honda dealer
facto,
left Jordan. Yeah, de facto factory teams.
Yeah.
The Honda dealer left Jordan out in the cold.
Yeah.
They had to revert to using Cosworths.
I've said the wrong thing actually, because I don't mean manufacturer team. What I meant to say was like a premier brand thing, because I consider like the Mercedes, Renault, obviously manufacturers, I consider Red Bull in the same breath as those teams.
So you're kind of like Team Procter and Gamble going up against Ferrari.
Essentially, I mean, it's the most Formula One's the most capitalist sport in the world, and whether we like it or not, our whole world is drifting more towards single brands of thing. You know, it's wherever getting to that point where you go and buy an Apple house or a Google house, for instance, and.
Yeah, but if you bought an Apple house, you'd have to move every year.
Yeah.
my new house is slightly shinier.
It's got better curtains. That'd be great. It's if you don't change your house every 2 years, you come home one day and there's been an update and your door's open slowly. But,
Dan, what have you started? Not you.
But I do.
Dan, not podcaster Dan.
I think that sadly, or well, if it's better for the sport and the sport ends up better for it in the end, then it's not sad, you know, whatever happens. But I do think the it looks like we're going to lose Sauber. Force India don't look good. It's Williams, if they don't do something, are going to carry on going into decline, which I'd suggest that Williams need to hook up with another engine supplier, for instance. You know, if they want to start moving forward and being competitive, because it proves, as much as you turn around and say, "Oh, you can be supplied an engine and be fine," you can't, can you?
Prototype formula is the only two words I'd like to use to remind everybody what Formula One should be.
Funnily enough, they're the exact words I used in the email back to Dan.
Excellent.
In fact, I quoted you.
You quoted me
saying it should be a prototype formula. You're right.
Yeah,
but there is a fine line, isn't there, between having like the idea of being a prototype formula, which it obviously is. Then we need to say, well, what dribbles down? You know, what drips down from that into road cars and stuff. But is
22 cars with 4 different engines between them and slightly different bits of sticky out carbon fibre, really a prototype formula?
KERS is making its way into road cars now. Remember, KERS was a relatively new thing.
But to me, a prototype formula should allow the manufacturers freedom to experiment.
Yeah.
I would like to see more of that, but there won't be. It just in order to keep
you go back to the 70s and every car on the grid was a completely different shape.
Yeah.
Now you look at the grid and the only way you can tell apart is
the liveries.
What colour it is.
Yeah. See, personally, I don't think that Formula One should be run as a test bed anymore for technologies. In the way that people don't watch football to see what could be made with boots. The boots get better because of the sport, and then they get sold to other people. For me, Formula One, the most important thing is entertainment.
You know the guy that invented the Adidas Predator boot, by the way, is the same guy that invented the system for hotels finding out if you've taken something out of the minibar.
Crazy.
Craig Johnson used to play for Liverpool, Australian player.
Nice.
Today's random Formula One fact brought to you by... Oh.
Well, no, I nicked it off QI. It was on a recording bit I saw the other night. Technically, Stephen Fry.
Do you know why we drive on the left instead of the right, like the rest of the world? Well, pretty much the rest of the world, and it's only like colony countries that.
Because Napoleon didn't get here.
No, it's because, and this is where the rest of the colony countries do. They that when if you were attacked, being on the left-hand side, you could draw your sword. And that's why we still drive on the left-hand side.
So it's all the fault of people like Dick Turpin, so you blame the Yorkshire.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to Formula 1.
Back to Formula 1. We've had another email from Doug, who pointed out that we've been having a few audio problems lately. We're hoping to get these fixed, because I've learned how the software works now. He also said, as someone that lives in Texas, he's happy to see both F1 and World Endurance races at the Circuit of the Americas. But he's worried that both races won't be there for much longer.
In Texas, particularly, or America?
Well, Circuit of the Americas.
Which is a fantastic circuit.
Yeah.
One of my favourites.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's a fantastic circuit. It's one of the races I quite like to go to. Doug is from Austin, isn't he?
Doug is... He doesn't say whereabouts in Texas from, but he just says he's currently living in Texas.
Right, okay. Well, Austin is, as Dan will know, somewhere I've always wanted to sort of go to and kind of...
And maybe not come back from.
And maybe not come back from, yeah. It's just... It's
Dougie, those, you're our new friend.
Yeah, it's one of the...
Come landlord and housemate.
It's one of those places that's really, always really appealed to me. So to have a racetrack right next to the airport is kind of, you know, for the international fan is amazing. But it's got, first and foremost, it's got to appeal to the Americans, and if it's not doing that, then why not?
Well, they've got Taylor Swift in this year.
The Formula One does, yeah.
The Formula One does. I mean, you say it's right next to the airport and it's useful for the international fans. I think it was either last year or the year before. Keanu Reeves made it back from China after the Grand Prix for the MotoGP race.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, yeah. He was in the MotoGP race, wasn't he? And then he was at the circuit. Was it at the Circuit of Americas afterwards or beforehand?
It was afterwards, because the Chinese Grand Prix was at about 3 a.m. our time.
Yeah,
and he was there on the pit walk. And then 9 p.m. our time, he's just off the plane in the MotoGP paddock.
Can you imagine how lethargic a tired Keanu Reeves is?
I didn't have to imagine. We saw it on TV. It was one word an hour.
I've seen The Matrix.
You know the bit in The Matrix where he leans back and everything goes slow? He was doing that for real. that wasn't a special effect when he was dodging those bullets. He really is that treacly.
Treacly.
Doug also makes a good point about pricing, because as a fan of the track, I find World Endurance more enjoyable, but the crowds are stunningly small. And for World Endurance, I can get a ticket for $70 for the main straight grandstand.
Which is amazing.
That is just...
Shall we...
A ticket that
would... Team Outing to the World Endurance in Austin.
We could do that, or we could... how much is he paying for a Formula One ticket?
Well, he reckons it probably costs about $5,000
for the Formula
One ticket.
Well, that's why it's not appealing
that
to...
That sounds an awful lot.
Main Street Grandstand, still an awful lot, yeah.
I think you could get Main Street Grandstand at Silverstone for about, like, £1,500, maybe? £1,000?
I don't know whether that's for the full weekend or just for race day, but...
True, possibly.
World Endurance does seem to be a lot cheaper.
Yeah, it's because race as well.
It's because no one goes to it.
Mm. But is it because the...
It's not as popular.
it just leads me to think, is it because FOM are charging the race promoters and the circuits too much to host the races, so they've got to really ramp the ticket prices up?
Yeah, because it's not as popular.
No, the ramp ticket prices for Formula One.
No, that's what I mean, but they're asking for more money for Formula One because it brings that in.
Yeah, but if it's not bringing it in America, then surely that defeats the object of trying to break America.
Right, but Bernie says to Circuit of the Americas, you can have an F1 Grand Prix.
Yeah.
But I want...
$16 million.
$16 million from you.
Yeah.
And then... The guy at Circuit of the Americas goes, right, okay, I've got my calculator out, how many people can I get in? So we will need to sell X at this to pay it back and make the profits. We're not going to sell this many tickets.
Yeah.
F1 fails again in America.
Well,
but what I'm saying is, are Formula One charging too much? Formula One, the organisation, are
you
charging the circuits too much to hold races in markets that they want to grow in? Are they just saying... everybody else is paying that much, so you've got to, and you've got to provide an instant fan
base.
That's
how business works. You can't you can't give special deals to certain countries.
Of course you can.
Of course you can.
If it's in Formula One's interest to grow the audience in the US mm-hmm. more than it is in Baku,
yeah,
then you charge the US circuit.
Oh no,
less.
I realise it's a great way of doing it, but
that's how business works.
But if you're trying to do that, then every other country's going to go. But you're only charging the US like 40 million, where you're charging us 70 million. So it would just mean that the other countries would get together and try and get the races cheaper.
Yeah, but they wouldn't be able to do that because they'll sign a contract for X number of years in advance to say that we are going to pay.
Yeah, but those contracts are up eventually.
That's when you have to start renegotiation.
It's not cost why Formula One's failed in America.
It's called sales. That's how it works. I think
it'll be different this year if Haas keep doing what they're doing.
I used to be a salesman.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a portfolio of products. I was selling industrial adhesives.
Yeah.
And I had roughly 400 clients.
Mm-hmm.
And every client paid different prices. Some I had to sell it to cheaper to get them to switch from an alternative manufacturer.
Yeah.
And then you put the prices up over time.
I'd also argue, though, that your clients didn't know how much the other clients were paying. In Formula One's case, I think they do know how much everyone else is.
So in that case, you introduce an element of confidentiality, and you don't tell them.
Oh well, that's fine. But you're moving the goalposts then. If you can do
well,
that,
well, no, because
fine.
I mean, I'm not sure that the circuit of the Americas knows how much Sochi, for example, paid for their race. Circuit of the Americas knows that.
Excuse me.
Circuit of the Americas knows that they can't afford to host a race, so. Then they could say, sorry, Formula One, can you charge us a little bit less for the race and then we can have a race in America? And if Formula One's stupid enough to go, no, sorry, no race in America this year, then they kind of shot themselves in the foot.
Except we have the alternative circuit in America. I believe that news came out this week, didn't it?
Last week, but there's more details about it now. As in, they've said yes.
It is rumoured still for this year.
Yeah, there is going to be a race in Las Vegas, but we don't know whereabouts yet. They haven't built the circuit in Las Vegas yet.
Caesar's Palace car park, isn't it?
But there's that many sporting rumours going around Las Vegas because they've got quite a big stadium that they're expanding even further, and the Oakland Raiders are rumoured to be moving there in the next couple of years. American football team, that's the one with the egg-shaped ball that they don't play anymore.
American rugby?
That's the one.
Right.
So, Las Vegas is the sporting rumoured centre, but I just don't see how they can fit it in this year, because the agreement is there will never be more than 20 races in a year. Oh, hang on, there's 21, that's just a one-off.
It won't be in this year, it's just fucking Bernie saying stuff.
No, this year, in place of the Circuit of the Americas.
I think we'll be at the Circuit of Americas this year.
I hope so.
I really hope so.
And I hope for Doug's sake, being in Texas.
Being in Texas, Doug would quite like to go to a home race rather than have to go to Vegas.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, he wants to go to Vegas, because somehow people actually do want to do that kind
of thing. See, the problem with breaking America for Formula One is the fact that you've got until Haas now and Scott Speed. You had no vested interest there. You know, there was nothing to support.
You've also got two premium race series
this
already.
Is the next thing I was going to say, essentially, America, realistically, for everything, could build a big wall around America.
Which they're talking about.
Which they're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, Donald Trump handling the Mexico side, and Channel 4's The Last Leg are talking about doing it for Canada.
I read an interview with Donald Trump the other day about, this was in like 1993, where he said if he was ever going to run for president,
he'd
try and get
the
Republican vote because they'll vote for anyone.
I'm leaving the politics aside.
Regardless of that, like you say, that country could have no contact with the rest of the world and not notice, because all the entertainment comes from America.
Apart from, I think, athletics and cycling, most of...
Wrestling's athletics.
It's still real to you, goddammit.
I was talking about like your 100 metres running and that.
Okay.
Where they do tend to compete with the rest of the world, but in almost every sports series, America just goes off and does their own thing.
Yeah. But the other thing you've got too is the fact that maybe three races a year are a reasonable time for Americans.
See, yeah.
This is the reason I don't watch NASCAR or IndyCar, is because it doesn't fit with me.
Yeah, Formula One survives in Australia, despite the fact that most of the race times in Australia are ridiculously early in the morning for Australians.
But they've always had Australian drivers there.
It's worse for the Australians than it is for us with like Japan, because they have to stay up late on a Sunday night, so miss work on a Monday morning.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, no, Japan is exactly the same time as it is in Australia because of the way the time zones work.
So you're looking at watching a race at 4 o'clock in 4 o'clock Monday morning.
Whereas
we watch the race at 4 o'clock on a Sunday morning.
I see what you mean, but different beast. Yeah. In a similar situation, but yeah, the Japan just takes place in the afternoon in Australia. Yeah.
But back for what Dan said before, Australia hasn't got, like, apart from what Fiat supercars, which I know is very popular in Australia, but it's not a IndyCar. Do you know what I mean? I don't think it's not quite the same level.
In Australia, it's not far off.
I know it's very popular, but I mean the actual sport itself, because it's globally, in Australia, confined to Australia.
A sport you can watch during the daytime.
Yeah.
And drink beers whilst watching.
Yeah. Slightly quicker touring cars.
Yes.
Yeah, still as many collisions, though. That just leaves us with something that we haven't actually thought of tonight.
Go.
I don't know, have we mentioned the Q word?
Do we have to rant about it?
Yeah.
Go on then. Stop dicking about with qualifying.
That's it, that's all we need to say.
When you have your next meeting on Thursday, make a decision on what to do with qualifying rather than spending 90 minutes making a decision on when you're going to have your next meeting.
Absolutely.
You can't really add anything to that.
Lee's done his how to say Formula One thing in the past.
However, you can add something to it because you're gonna.
So Lee has come up with a suggestion in the past to say Formula One, but Bernie wrote back and he emailed us 3legs4wheels@gmail.com and said, thanks, Lee, but your idea's a bit rubbish.
Apparently.
And so is your punctuation and grammar, you're just like a driver.
I'm 734th on the list of qualifying systems, and he reckons I should have my go by Britain.
So my thinking on this is that... Sorry, I have Super Cat on my lap here. My thinking on this is that the teams and the Formula One administration, the rights holders, they've come up with this plan, but they're not thinking about why they're coming up with it. The reason they're coming up with this plan to change qualifying is because they want more overtakes in the racing, which is what the fans want.
Mm-hmm. I'd actually argue that the reason they're coming up with these Formula One things is because they're trying to piss on the lamppost of Formula One to prove it's theirs, but carry on.
There is that theory.
But the teams don't want this to happen because it feels like they're being punished
for doing well.
Like, so if they mix up the qualifying so that the better drivers are further back.
So really what you need is an incentive for the teams
to go to the back.
To start from the back.
Blowjobs for every row.
No.
That's qualifying idea number 842.
that gets implemented in Suzuka.
Mine would be points for overtakes.
1 point per overtake?
1 point per place you make up during the race.
So if you start 15th and you win, you get an extra 15 on top of the 25 for the win?
Would be the simple way to do it. There's there's corner cases, you might want to say, well, you can, you qualify as well as you can, and then you've got the choice of how far back you start. You can start from where you qualified, or from 20th, and give yourself the opportunity to pick up 20 extra points.
Yeah,
you'd have to do it by grid position. But personally, I'm not particularly on board with this idea. But I did
cause that's because you're wrong.
Yeah, but I did just think then, doesn't that mean all Ferrari would do is continually bring their second driver into the pit lane and pop him out in front of their number one driver and keep getting them 3 points?
No, that's why you do points, places made up during the race, rather than the number of overtakes. Yeah. And I think for the drivers' championship, because team orders are allowed, you'd have to make it so a driver overtaking their teammate doesn't give them an extra point.
Yeah, so you've got to think, you know, drivers, for example, Nico Rosberg doing what happened in Russia a couple of years ago, where he completely got the first corner wrong, but still managed to pit at the end of the first lap, went right to the end of the race and finished second. He started at second, but had he started at the back of the grid or in the pit lane and still made it up to second, he would have scored more points than Lewis Hamilton, who led from lights to flag, because he made more overtakes. He made up more places during the race to get to second. But that's the only thing I can think of, is trying to explain to the neutral, the newcoming fan, well, no, the guy who finished second has got more points because he made up all the places, even though
he did a lot more work to come second than the guy who started in first did to finish first.
But then would you lose points for being overtaken? For losing places from your group position?
You could end up with minus points then, for some people.
I would say no to that, but maybe the teams, once they've listened to my idea and realised it's genius but just needs a bit of tweaking, maybe they'll...
Well, tell you what, shall we meet up again on Thursday and discuss that then?
Have we just had a 90-minute meeting to decide we're going to meet on Thursday?
Yes.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Right. Do we have a Captain Obvious this week?
Yes.
Because I've got one here.
Go on, then.
Seb, it was a very short race today.
Well... Well, was it Kimi that won it after Australia?
Yeah, Kimi. Something's happened.
Yeah, something's happened.
As flames are flying all around him.
Yeah.
Just quickly, what does everybody think about qualifying?
Q1's pretty good.
I love watching the 90 seconds tick down while the drivers are on the track.
Yeah.
I think that's really exciting.
When they're not on the track.
Well, when it's saying pit, and you're thinking, and you've got three drivers in a row in the pit, and you're thinking, well, they're not qualifying, we know what's happening.
For the next four and a half minutes.
Yeah.
If they're going to keep my opinion is, if they're going to keep the elimination qualifying, which according to Bernie, that's there, that's what it is, that's what's happening, drops mic, walks off. Why not make it so that if you're on a lap during the 90-second countdown, you finish the lap? 90-second countdown, but you get to finish the lap that you're on. So if you are halfway round at a flyer, because there's been a couple of drivers cut out by because Grosjean was in Australia.
Yeah.
If you are on a flyer and your 90 seconds runs out, you get to finish that lap.
That still doesn't help the fact that after your one-shot first lap qualifying, most of the drivers come in for a fresh set of tyres, so they need an out lap, a hot lap, and then an in lap. Or an out lap and a hot lap to stay in.
Yeah, because at the moment the elimination actually starts at 7 minutes minus two laps.
Yeah.
And which is what it really is.
Yeah.
And the other thing with it is the fact that the teams just simply don't have enough tyres.
Yeah.
The stupid aggregate thing that Bernie and John Todd got together, but I said this before the podcast, it's an amalgamation of the two session qualifying from the 90s and the one shot qualifying from the early 2000s.
And then how long did both of those last?
Not very long.
I think the two shot qualifying they managed to get 3 years out of it, and the aggregate two session qualifying was about 3 years. Aggregate qualifying, 6 races.
Yes. Yeah,
haven't
like
they
that.
Said as well that the teams are going to need extra tyres for that to work?
Yeah, but Pirelli have said we can't do it
because they don't have enough tyres.
They don't have enough tyres.
Oh, I thought they said Pirelli said that if they can provide the tyres
but they need to know now.
But Bernie said that's not going to be a thing.
Oh, right. Well. Yeah.
So, your captain, obvious.
Lewis Hamilton.
Hmm?
Apparently breathing is important.
Breathing is important.
Breathing is important. Yes. Yeah. Well done. Yeah, I'm going for that one. I say Lewis.
Seb had a very, very strong contender there.
He put
in a really good effort.
He did, but Lewis
is just insurmountable when he's on form like this.
Breathing is important.
So, Lewis Hamilton, you are this week's...
Captain Obvious.
Captain Obvious. Talking how I met your mother joke thrown in at the end. Yeah, so we have just had an hour and a half meeting to decide we're going to meet again on Thursday. That is one of the longest ones ever. Don't forget to leave us feedback on iTunes if you get a chance.
If you're on Twitter,
I was just about to continue with the iTunes thing.
Oh, okay.
We'd like to apologise to the guy that thought we were swearing too much when we were talking about Max Verstappen, but how can you talk about Max Verstappen on the radio in Australia without swearing? If you're on Twitter, we are at @3legs4wheels, and if you want to drop us an email, because if you've got something to say that's more than 140 characters, as Dan said earlier, we are @3legs4wheels@gmail.com.
We'd love to hear from you.
Definitely. Keep the emails and tweets coming in, and we will see you next week.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.